Dan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Ellen Mariani, and her husband was in the plane, or supposedly in the plane, that hit the South Tower on September 11th, 2001. Now, what has happened? Everybody who lost people in either the World Trade Center or on the planes was simply bribed by the government not to ask any questions. And they gave somewhere between $850,000 to $1.5 million to the families and the survivors. It was a payoff with a provision that they would not pursue trying to find out what happened. They would not bring any lawsuits. Oh, we're so concerned about the suffering of all these people, but of course, they're going to have to agree that they will not bring lawsuits because, of course, the last thing that the federal government wanted were people asking what really happened on September 11th, why it was that morning when a nation that spends over $350 billion a year to defend itself from the Department of Defense, why that morning we had no defense for America. Why the airplanes, which ordinarily are stationed at Andrews Air Force Base to defend the United States Capitol and to defend the Pentagon and defend the Capitol building and defend the White House, why those planes weren't available that morning? Why the missile batteries that defend the Pentagon were deactivated that morning? Why all the normal means of communication between the FAA and NORAD were simply canceled and put on hold? Why it was that on that morning, why the terrorists were to get onto planes with very few people on them, somewhere between 28% and about 16% of the normal passenger occupancy, so there wouldn't be so many people killed, so there wouldn't be so many lawsuits against the aircraft companies if lawsuits were filed. Why it was that just a few days beforehand, somebody had been shorting a great large blocks of American Airlines stock and United Airlines stock and Morgan Stanley stock. Why immediately after the crashes, we were told 6 million people died in the crash of the two buildings, and then it turned out it was only about 3 million, because in the South Tower where the announcement was made, everybody's to stay at their seat, don't get up and leave, as the people looked out the window at the North Tower, and they saw people jumping out of the windows and the flames shooting out, and yet the voices came over the loudspeaker and said, stay at your seats, there's nothing to worry about. And they knew a plane was coming in, another hijacked plane was heading towards New York. But the thing was that on the top floor, Morgan Stanley, the top two floors, where the man in charge of security ran up and down the aisle saying, get out, we're under attack. And he saved 1,700 people, or we would have had the 6,000 people they planned die. As it was, there were only 3,000. And, of course, no matter how many people died, it was too many. They don't want to ask about what happened to the Pentagon when this plane that hit the building suddenly just disappeared. Well, they don't want to ask about the woman who was there, who was in the building, and she's described in Jim Marr's book, and he's talked to her. She came out through that hole in the side of the building. There was no fire there. There was no wreckage there. When she, of course, got to the hospital, the men in black arrived and said, take the money and be quiet. You saw the plane. You saw the wreckage. And she said, I didn't see any plane. I didn't see any wreckage. And she was told, take the money and keep quiet. The book is called Inside Job by Jim Marsh. We carry the book. They don't want people asking that question, and that's why we're talking to Ellen Mariani tonight. Well, Ellen, of course, you are on the front lines of this battle trying to get the truth out. You wouldn't be bribed. You wouldn't take the money. So why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about your husband. He was on Flight 175. Ellen?
Yes, now I hear you.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I didn't hear what you asked me.
Well, I just said your husband was on Flight 175.
Well, I have a little letter that I thought that it would bring back to some people what I'm going through.
Go ahead.
And this is directed to the president, okay, tonight. In my heart, as a September 11th, 2001 widow, and there are many widows, and I'm not out for pity, I'm not out for sympathy, I just want people to know that I feel, as citizens, we've been lied to. I also feel there are many enemies within the gates of our White House, and I'm very saddened over that. And I'm also sad that we not only lost our loved ones, but we've lost our country because we cannot get into the courts and have a fair hearing or get to the bottom of what happened to our loved ones. And then that's what I wanted to talk about tonight, where the Red Cross had quite a lead in this as far as steering the families that were grieving heavily into seminars, getting them medicated, steering them into Boston, and introducing them to lawyers, financial planners, mortgage brokers, and then leading them or getting them still under medication. They especially took my stepdaughter under medication and got her to go against me in the courts. I think this is the saddest, sickest, corrupt mess I've ever in my life experienced at my age. And I think our country should be screaming. There is 500 of those that are ruling our country, and there's millions of us. We have to stand up before we have lost everything we have called, which is freedom.
Well, of course, Ellen, you've tried to bring lawsuits because you were willing to forego the easy money, the $1 million that you probably could have gotten if you'd just gone along with the system, but you wouldn't do that because you wanted to get the truth.
And they also threw me out as my husband's administrator of his estate because they couldn't pin anything bad on me because they tried and they found out the only way to get rid of me is to make a lie, and they lied and said there were grave errors. Dr. Stan, there were no grave errors. The only error I did, if you call it an error, I got in and saw the wicked web they have webbed. Weaved in Boston through all the attorneys because they didn't want the truth out. And this is kind of a bad situation for 9/11 families to listen to or go through. And our children for the next generations to come are going to suffer from this.
Hold that thought there for just a moment as we bring our stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Ellen Mariani. Her husband was on Flight 175. Supposedly was on Flight 175. There are some people who have looked very closely at the pictures, and we do have video pictures of the plane that hit the South Tower. Only, at least the pictures that I have seen, there weren't any windows in the plane. Well, 175, of course it has windows in the plane, but this one didn't. The one, of course, that had taken off did. The Flight 175, her husband was on. But then lots of strange questions. What about the plane that hit the Pentagon? Where is the wreckage from the plane? Why did the government confiscate all of the video cameras that were focused on the Pentagon? And they've only released one or two pictures, and all the rest of the videos, have simply been eliminated. If there's nothing to conceal, why are they concealing it? Why did they tell the woman who came out from the Pentagon, who's described in Jim Marsh's wonderful book, Inside Job, and I've talked to Jim about this, asked if he could get the woman to come onto our program, but I think she's probably afraid for her life. Why did they tell her to take the money and be quiet and not to tell anybody that there wasn't any wreckage, because she came out through the hole in the side of the building. There wasn't any fire there. The fire was on the upper floors, but it wasn't where she was. And the question is, how could that be? How could a gigantic airliner, I think it was a 757, suddenly disappear? No motors, no, just sort of totally disintegrate? There are lots of unanswered questions, questions that nobody really wants to ask. If you've ever seen the crash site where Flight 93 went down in Pennsylvania, there's just a big hole in the ground. There's absolutely no evidence of any plane wreckage there. There's wreckage elsewhere. There's apparently a motor 6 or 8 miles away from this plane that supposedly crashed into the ground. Because we're told it certainly wasn't shot down, it didn't explode in midair, it crashed into the ground, so that motor must have just sort of bounced 6 or 8 miles away, or a couple of miles away. It's pretty hard to explain so many of the unanswered questions of the planted evidence, obviously planted evidence to this really confuse the American people. The passports, two of the passports survived, two of the passports of the wicked Islamic terrorists. One of them floated to the ground, gotten out of the pocket of the hijacker that hit the plane that hit the North Tower, got out of the flaming wreckage there in the building, got out of the flaming building, and then gently floats to the ground a block and a half away. Not a single singe on that passport, the most amazing thing. One chance in 100 billion that this would have happened, and is picked up by a passerby. The story is told in the, and we have actually the story from the 9/11 Commission report where they tell that story. But nobody ever asked, did this really happen, or was this planted evidence? If they had the name of the hijacker and it was planted, then they had to know beforehand who was going to be on that plane. And the same thing happened to Flight 93. There was a passport found there. So, Ellen, there's so many answered questions. As you try to bring this out to people, and I know you're doing a lot of talking, what sort of response do you get from people? Do they sort of look at you, as if you're crazy?
Well, first of all, no one dares to speak. They've got the whole world scared to death. They have listened to people that they have disappeared people with. They've disappeared with them. And this is quite the world, isn't it? We're supposed to be the best country in the world. Yes, really. They used to be able to fight to get into the United States. Now I don't think they want anything to do with us. They're not talking. They're just going along with the flow. They're petrified. Well, we don't know if it's medication. We don't know what it is people are frightening them with. We got to wake up.
Well, of course, there are a few people who have had the courage to speak out. Certainly, Christian Breitweiser and certainly Mindy Kleinberg. And, of course, we reproduced their testimony. I think in my, let's see, my October 2002 newsletter is Christian Breitweiser's testimony before the for the Senate Intelligence Committee, combined Intelligence Committee, very touching testimony, pointed out that the FBI, which is just full with bumbling idiots, we're told, oh, they had no idea.
Yeah, right.
They had no idea who any of these people were, but within 24 hours, they knew the identity of all of the people. They had pictures of all of the people. How could you be so incompetent on one day and so effective the next?
And 3 weeks later, they had all the victims' fund procedure all in order 3 weeks later. Yes, but didn't come out to it for 3 months later. Tell me that one. That was all quoted to me and told to me 3 weeks later after Neil was killed. Right out of Boston law firm.
And, of course, the law firm really tried to get you to take the money and just sign the papers.
Yes.
That you would not try to find out what had happened to your husband.
No. I mean, you can't live... You know, love is not going, money is not going to buy love. It's truth. We have to heal. Till we get the truth, none of us have been healed at all. And we're asking people to come forward. You know, I know they're afraid. I know it didn't happen to them. But who knows? History does repeat. And I hope to hell in my lifetime and everybody else's, this never happens. But that is not going to happen because Waco, Oklahoma, 9/11, we can go on and on, frontwards and backwards.
Well, there have been many unanswered questions, and we know that there's a cover-up on so many of the things. For instance, Stephen Jones, who was the attorney for Timothy McVeigh, wrote a book that was called Others Unknown, the Oklahoma City bombing a conspiracy. And in that book, he tells about how Timothy McVeigh had written his sister and said, I am part of a secret special forces unit that's involved in that illegal activity. Timothy McVeigh wrote his sister and said that. In fact, Stephen Jones, when he opened his defense of Timothy McVeigh in Colorado at the trial, opened with that statement and that story and put Jennifer on the stand to tell the story that her brother had said he was part of a special secret Special Forces unit involved in illegal activity. Not one word in the major media. Now, if you're out there in the listening audience, you say that can't be true. Well, we'll be glad to send you copies of the pages of his book where that story is told. So how could you cover something like that up? Here in the United States, Timothy McVeigh, the lone bomber who, like Lee Harvey Oswald, the lone assassin, but of course it's all a cover story. They cannot tell the American people the truth. Had we known the truth about what happened in Oklahoma City, why 911 never would have occurred.
Well, President Bush, as private attorney, and his brother Jeff, private attorney, Greenberg and Tririg in Boston, Massachusetts, was involved in Red Cross and Kenneth Feinberg and the funneling of the applications and the money. They made sure that my stepdaughter got certain attorneys, and that certain attorney went in and put a second lawsuit on top of mine, or beside mine in New York, of my wrongful death, and then in print said, it is obvious that the stepmother and the stepdaughter, the stepdaughter and the stepmother do not get along. When my third attorney went to explain it, the judge would not hear it. Now you tell me if this is not corrupt.
Well, of course, nobody is going to suggest that there isn't tremendous corruption there, Ellen. The difficulty is that the American people are not getting the story, and this is why I asked you to come on and be with us this evening.
Thank
and
you.
Share your concern and your story with our listeners. And incidentally, our telephone number, if you'd like to talk to Ellen, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And of course, you've had several attorneys, and it seems that they all have done everything they could not to represent you, but to keep from representing you
exactly.
And keep from getting the truth out.
You're right. And even one of the private attorneys that the stepdaughter has in New Hampshire, on his paperwork through the website, it even shows a chess game piece. So all this is nothing but a big chess game where lives have been sacrificed. And who's going to win and how they're going to win. It is very sick.
And, of course, the great tragedy is, you know, that we're talking about how we just feel so deeply about the victims of 911 that we want to give them each a lot of money, but we didn't want to give a lot of money to the people who died in the Oklahoma City bombing. We didn't want to give a lot of money to Randy Weaver, after they killed his wife. Of course, eventually the government did make a settlement, not with Randy, but with his two children. I think Randy got a few thousand dollars. Each of his children got $100,000. It's almost as if suddenly we can kill people. We can get away with it. Because Randy Weaver had committed no crime at all. He had been set up by the government intentionally because they wanted him to act as an informant for him. And when they wouldn't, they gave him notification to go to trial, to appear in court. But they gave him the wrong date intentionally. And then that way they could send in, of course, the killers who killed his wife and killed his son. But they gave him $25,000 to buy him off. And, of course, they tried to send him to prison. They would have sent him to prison for many years. And of course, they did the same thing with the people at Waco. I talked to the Sarah Blaine, who was the head of the jury that heard the Waco case. Her remark to me was, the wrong people were on trial. We didn't want anything to done. The people there, we heard all the evidence, and the government had come in and created this, and they were shooting first, and they'd already killed the Davidians before the Davidians began defending themselves. But, of course, the American people were never told that. And, of course, they sent some of those people to jail for 40 years. And the jury said they weren't guilty at all. And the judge forced them to make some minor accusations against them, told them they had to come up with something, and then sent them to 40 years in prison. The prosecuting attorney felt so bad about this that he tried to help. And the government went after him, destroyed his life, destroyed his marriage, threatened to take away his license, and threatened to send him to prison. That was the prosecutor who felt so badly about what had happened.
That's why I want to tell the story, because it was President Bush's private attorney.
Go ahead.
In Boston, who told ahead of time that they were going to go in, they had planned to go in to throw out me as the widow and the administrator of my dead husband. They already had warned us, and we already found out about it, but never dreamed our country would allow this in the...
But of course, when you have evil, what a nation has taken God out of its schools and prayer out of its schools, and of course, everything is done to take away the Ten Commandments and the very religious foundations of right and wrong. Are we surprised that we have evil and corrupt people in government? We'll be right back here in just a moment with Ellen Mariani. We'll welcome your calls. And we'll try to let her tell her story in just a moment when we get back here at Radio Liberty. Okay, Ellen, why don't you go ahead and just tell the stories you'd like to.
Well, we were informed that through another widow who was in this office of this President Bush's private attorneys, Greenberg and Trierig in Boston, that the stepdaughter was there, and the next thing we found out, there was a lawsuit being filed against me. And so my New Hampshire attorney called this Dan Baganowski, and he, by mistake, thought it was my stepdaughter's new female attorney and told everything. Yes, don't worry, we're going in and throw Mrs. Mariani out as the administrator. Don't worry about a thing. And guess what? They did. Through lies, conspiracy, they did it.
And well, of course, Eddie, but you see, you're standing in the way, you and just a small handful of people are standing in the way of a complete cover-up of what happened on September 11th. That's why they won't allow any lawsuits to be brought against the Saudis who financed the Islamic terrorists involved in the attack on the World Trade Center. And we say we can't allow lawsuits against the Saudis. Why, that would be a terrible thing. We can't try to get to the find who financed this whole incredible thing. Why, that could be a diplomatic problem. It could be some sort of a diplomatic crisis. So the lawsuits of the people trying to sue the Saudis has been thrown out. And who was behind it? Why, of course, it was the president's law firm headed by James Baker III.
Well, Red Cross didn't help. I'm sorry. They were the ones gathering all the grievance groups together and passing and hiring private psychology groups and everything, and they handed out medication, and that's when they turned around and got them all to the fund. They're in this as knee-deep as you can go.
Now you're talking about the Red Cross.
Yes, I am.
And, of course, the Red Cross has been part and parcel of the establishment going back for many, many decades. And, you know, and they were formed not to help people. They were formed as a cover for the establishment, simply one of the many arms of the establishment. So I'd never heard anybody mention that until you did, Ellen, but
yes.
I'm sure that's absolutely right.
I have it all in writing here. I've got every bit of it. I've got their booklet, their financial services seminar booklet. And it was all through Greenberg Trierig's office and the 9/11 Boston Fund that they established. And Kenneth Feinberg is involved in funneling all the applications and the money through this law firm.
And of course, Feinberg was the man who was given the job of dispensing all these billions of dollars. They spent billions of dollars to keep the people quiet. That's what it was. It was simply a buyout of the families of the victims of 9/11.
It's sad. They're all medicated. How is this legal? I'd like to ask these families. Are they aware of what they did? Do they feel it's too late? I don't know. And I know Brown Brothers and Harriman are involved in this, too.
Well, for the people who don't know, Brown Brothers and Harriman is a very distinguished bank. In fact, one of its most distinguished partners in years past was a man named Prescott Bush, later Senator Prescott Bush, whose son became the President of the United States. Whose grandson became the President of the United States. That's Brown Brothers Harriman, always been closely tied into the Skull and Bones secret society.
It's very sad our country has come to this. It is very, very sad. I'm looking at their booklet. It has 8 chapters in it.
Now, this is the Red Cross booklet?
This is the booklet that the Red Cross, yes, was in charge of, and it's called the Financial Services Seminar, and it was put on, and they were introducing all these different services, health and education, financial solutions, Wells Fargo home mortgages, and David Baganowski for Greenberg and Trierig, and then Eric Lowry for Brown Brothers. It's all here.
Hold that thought right there in just a moment, Ellen. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Ellen Mariani, and, of course, her husband perished on that morning. We don't know whether he was on the plane or not. We do know that they had the capacity to have drone planes fly. All we know is, of course, many people have looked at the pictures of the plane that hit the South Tower, and and said there were no windows in it. It had some sort of a pod on the bottom of it. Looked much more like a refilling plane, one that was used for a refilling a tanker plane rather than the regular plane, a regular passenger plane. But we really don't know what happened this morning, and everything is kept from letting the American people know. There's a wonderful video put out by our good friend Dave Van Kleist, the husband of Joyce Riley, called In Plain Sight. In Plain Sight, and you can get that off the internet, or we can help you get a copy. And you can actually see the pictures of the plane, and it sure doesn't look like any passenger plane I ever saw. But assuming it was a passenger plane, and assuming Ellen's husband did die on that plane, why, everything was done then to buy off the families of the victims of what happened that morning. And Ellen was saying that the Red Cross played a large part in this. Get the people together, get them into grieving groups, get them medicated, get them into investments, because they're going to have a lot of money, and they got to learn how to invest all that money so they can make more money. Was that sort of the theme, Ellen?
Yes, it was. Yes, it definitely was, and I caught on to that immediately. They would do one thing, they would say one thing and do another. Fill out this form, you'd wait and wait and wait. Other people came in to help us with money. Salvation Army, praised them. I praised them greatly because they didn't put us through any hell, but Red Cross put us through a lot of hell, lied to us, said money was coming to us, and the next check we got, it was in the estate of the dead person. Now, if you don't call that lying to our face after they had given away $1 million of the widows' and the children's money that you people in the country and out of the country gave, you can't get any worse than that.
Well, I tell you what, that's why we give our money to the Salvation Army. We do not contribute to the Red Cross. Let's go to Jim calling from Missouri. Hi, Jim. Did you have a question for Ellen?
Yes, ma'am. I'm so sorry about your situation and your loss and so forth.
Thank you, Jim.
I heard you on Alex Jones, by the way, recently.
Okay.
My question is, and this is for either or both of you, who do you think was behind 9/11? I mean, do you think the government was, or it was incompetence on our government's part, or
yes,
how
I
would
think.
You...
Yes,
I'm
I
not
do.
Sure.
I would say the government is behind it. They're not incompetent. They're pretending they didn't know. They're pretending they had mock programs or whatever you want to call it.
The mock exercises that
yes,
morning. That's why we had all... the terrorists were just so fortunate that they picked that very morning
yes.
when we were having this mock attack of an airplane flying into a government building. And that's why, of course, nobody knew that this was a real attack. Wasn't that fortunate the terrorists knew that?
And why would they not allow me to have a wrongful death lawsuit with a trial by jury if they're not guilty of something? Now that they've taken over and killed millions over in the other countries, why can't I now still have a trial by jury? They called it security. Well, whose security?
The national security. Because, of course, we can't let Osama bin Laden know what we knew before.
Yeah, where is he? Yeah.
So, Jim, I will tell you that everything suggests that they needed an incident to justify going to war. Do you have access to the Internet?
Yes, sir.
Oh, well,
I have spent hours on your website since I heard you.
All right. If you go
I heard you a year or two ago when you were on Marlon Maddox's show before he passed away.
Well, Marlon was a good friend. But if you go up on my website and pull down all my newsletters, in fact, we're going to compile them, I think, into a book as soon as I get through the current project. Just, you know, a loose leaf folder with all of the articles we compiled. But they needed an incident to go to war.
May I ask you one more question?
Sure, go ahead.
Is it parallel to the quote that I read in your newsletters about McGeorge Bundy, what he wrote in the question of either or in foreign affairs in 1967?
Well, of course, that had to do with Vietnam, but simply pointing out that Vietnam was not fought for the reason we thought. It was fought to bring about socialism here at home.
That's what I mean. Do you think this was set up as a similar kind of thing to, like, if you're watching a magician, they have the assistants dressed that way so you look a little more at the assistant so you can't see the trick?
You will have to watch both hands. The one hand that's moving is not the one that they're pulling the rabbit out of the hat with. It's all a matter of illusion and delusion. You can't let the American people know that every war we involved in the last century was contrived. Hey, you want to hang on until after the break?
No, sir, that's all right. Thank God for you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We'll be back. We'll talk to Jim from Chicago as soon as we get back. Welcome your calls. If you'd like to give us a call and talk to Ellen at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and let's go to Jim, who's calling from Chicago. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Pretty good, sir.
Do you have a question or comment?
I have a question to Ellen. Yes. Originally, Phil Berg was your attorney?
Correct.
What happened between the two of you?
I don't really want to get into that. Let's put it this way, because we don't want to lay ourselves open for a libel suit by an attorney. Let's put it this way, they had a parting of the ways that I don't think was very acrimonious. Would that be a fair statement, Ellen?
He is still legally my attorney.
Oh, he is your attorney, okay.
Yes, and he's a very likable person. But I wouldn't do as he wanted, and he rolled over to the other side. I can tell that.
Okay, you can tell that. Okay, Jim.
That's the answer you wanted. He sandbagged my case, Jim.
Okay. Say it again, please.
Did you hear me?
No, I didn't.
I said he sandbagged my case. He went to the other side.
Do you think
I'm very sad over that. Yes.
Do you think he might have been paid off? Or?
Yes, I do.
Well, we can't say that he was paid
off.
Let's just leave it at this, that he did not handle the case the way that Alan feels it should have been handled. Can we say that, Jim?
Yes, okay.
Okay, is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. So I think that it's important that certainly the tremendous pressure is being put on these attorneys to go along with the flow, because after all, could you imagine what would happen if the American people realized that we knew ahead of time what was going to happen? Certainly, if you've read Dr. Dennis Cuddy's excellent book, A Cover-Up, or the September 11th Prior Knowledge, you will know that the children in the Pakistani section of New York City, many of them brought cameras to school on the morning of the 11th of September so they could take pictures of the attack on the World Trade Center they knew was going to happen. But our FBI, and we spent, I don't know, probably $10 billion a year, $15 billion a year on the FBI, they had no idea what was going to happen. The CIA had no idea what was going to happen. The Defense Intelligence Agency, military intelligence, naval intelligence, Air Force intelligence, Marine intelligence, the National Security Agency. We spent $40 billion on intelligence, and none of them knew what the school children in New York City knew on the morning of September 11th. Do you really believe that's true? The reason that they can't allow Ellen to bring her suit is because if the American people knew that we left those people to die, exactly as Roosevelt, President Roosevelt, left those sailors at Pearl Harbor to die back in December 7th of 1941, why they wouldn't want to go to war over in Iraq if they realized what Paul O'Neill wrote in his book, The Price of Loyalty, on page 96. We talked about attending National Security Agency meetings in January and February of 2001, 8 to 9 months before the attack. And what are they talking about? How are we going to get the American people to go along with a preemptive attack on Iraq? Page 96, The Price of Loyalty, Paul O'Neill. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. So far, probably about 1,300 men and boys have died, men and women have died in Iraq. Of course, we don't know how many there are, because have you ever noticed they never combine the figures for Iraq and Afghanistan together? But we do know that there are well over 10, probably getting closer to 15,000 casualties beside those that have died. And then there are tens of thousands of others with these weird diseases, probably related to the experimental vaccines they're using on our boys or the depleted uranium. So we're going to have hundreds of thousands of casualties before this is over. It's suggested that there are already over 100,000 Iraqis, both military and civilians, who are dead. And who's responsible? Well, it all goes back to what happened on that morning of September 11th.
Terrible.
Could you imagine what would happen if the American people even dared to suspect that we knew the attack was coming and we did nothing to stop it? because, of course, we needed an excuse to go to war with Iraq, and that's what this was all about. Had nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction, had nothing to do with what an evil man Saddam Hussein was, because we'd been financing him. We financed him all during the 1980s, and anybody who doubts that, we have a wonderful clipping out of the Washington Post called "When an Ally Becomes an Enemy," goes into how we financed Saddam Hussein, how we gave him chemical and biological weapons, and how then our ambassador, Abel Glaspie, told Saddam to go ahead, for all intents and purposes, and attack Kuwait, and that gave us an excuse for the war. If you'd like a copy of that clipping, "When an Ally Becomes an Enemy," give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We're not going to say something we can't back up here. Mike, are you calling from Santa Cruz?
Yep.
Okay, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, speaking of body counts, I'm wondering if either of you has ever heard a report that had to do with bodies recovered from the wreckages of either Flight 77 or Flight 93.
No. Nothing was found of my husband. Not a
Which airplane was he on?
175.
That was the one that hit the South Tower.
Yeah.
And of course, 77 hit the Pentagon. 93 went down in Pennsylvania. And the most amazing thing, although the passport of one of the two of the hijackers supposedly survived and were planted, I mean, were just found accidentally, but none of the remains of any of the people were found. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Well, I'm as the years go by since 9/11 2001, I've come, well, increasingly I'm coming to believe that almost literally everything that was told us by the major news was a lie. The only thing that was obvious was that four airplanes went down, probably only three airliners or airplanes of a larger size, heavies they call them. And now it's seeming as though at least two of those were not even passenger aircraft. They were military without windows.
But we can't be sure, Mike. That may very well be the case. We just don't know. They're doing everything they can to confuse us. They're creating all sorts of rabbit trails intentionally to divert us. They have people planted in the conservative movement putting out disinformation. But go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, well, since it seems as though there could have been some bodies scraped out of the Pentagon, although it's more than likely it was only a jet fighter that went in there with its missiles just ahead of it. There's certainly a great case to say that no jumbo jet or you know, of that a plane of that type went in there.
Well,
and then it seems Flight 93, even though the wreckage was scattered over 8 miles, which they have never told us in the major news, it still seems as though they could have found some bodies somewhere. But there hasn't been any, and I just wonder if there ever were any. These crashes were certainly designed to obliterate as much as possible any remains that might have been there.
Can I say something?
You sure can, Ellen.
While I was ordered to call the courts, and so were the families that wanted to sue at the time, I was sitting in a room. It was a room off of the in the federal courts in New York, and there was a couple. They had a three-ring notebook. It seems the Pennsylvania flight, her mom was on it. They had, I don't know how many pages, it was very thick of luggage, pieces of luggage. They had numbered all these luggages, where all clothing, pictures, wallets, shoes. So that luggage from the Pennsylvania flight was thrown everywhere, and they collected it.
But this was over an 8 mile radius. But the thing is, right at the crash site, if you've ever seen pictures of it, you didn't even see any records there. The only thing that they found was this one lonely passport just at the crash site. Have you ever seen those pictures there? There's nothing but a big hole in
it. I watched Dan Rather out in the field lying to us again, telling us that was where the plane went down. I just want to ask
you... Well, let's get Ellen's thoughts on that. Ellen,
well, how did they get all this luggage? So this luggage was blown all over the place. They said, the couple said... It was 5 miles.
Right.
That's what they were told.
Right.
But now, let me ask for clarity. They said that the luggage actually was found in that debris field?
Blown all over the place.
No, it was in the debris field. It wasn't
the
crash site.
Yeah. The debris field.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So
and
they
were all numbered.
Strange.
These items were all numbered for their families to identify them.
Right. That was the luggage, but it wasn't nothing that was in the cabin seems to have appeared, except for the one passport of one of the hijackers.
Mm-hmm.
That did survive at the crash site.
Even just the fact that they're telling us that Arab hijackers were on the planes, I'm questioning everything that they have said, and it can very easily be the case that there were no Arab hijackers at all, that Al-Qaeda never was involved at all. This whole thing is such a humongous pack of lies everywhere you look. Not even that is true, because these planes could very well have done the very same thing under remote control.
You could be absolutely right, Mike. We just don't know, and we're better off not to conjecture. We're better off to talk about what we do know, and that is that they are covering something up and that we're not being told the truth.
Covering lots of things.
Okay. Anything else? Anything you'd like to say in response to Mike?
No, but I hope this whole country is opening their eyes, because I'm not out for any sympathy. I just want to get what I've been through, and hopefully you people will not go through it. By getting a will, I would have never gone through all this hell, and get your will videotaped, and so you're ready for your maker whenever.
Yeah, God bless. Okay, thanks so much for calling, Mike.
Can I ask one more?
Sure you can. Go ahead.
Regarding the Homeland Security angle and all this, you know, there was the day that the supposed Saddam Hussein was captured and you know, portrayed on TV and everything. What was that, like a year and a half ago or
something like that?
Yeah. And that night in Congress, there was some very significant document that was passed and signed. Are you familiar with that story, and do you know what that document was? Joan Peros told the story once on the air about a year ago.
I don't know, but we will have Joan next Tuesday evening, I think, and you can ask her then.
Can I just say that the minute there wasn't too many days after 9/11, they put that stabilization bill through to protect who? It was the airline. Then they put in the Homeland Security. And then, what was the other thing?
The Patriot Act.
Patriot Act. Everything is to protect them. What happened to us? We are the people of this country. So they are covering up something big.
No question at all.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks so much, Mike. And let's go to Tim, who's calling us from Indianapolis, Indiana. Hi, Tim. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'd like to make a couple comments. Then I had a couple questions for Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Stan, last week you stated that, there was a Saudi Arabia 9/11 connection. Now, that couldn't be more wrong, sir. Saudi Arabia has been keeping our schools warm, our homes warm, our factories running, our cars and our trucks for the last 50 years. They make $1 million a day. God bless them. Why would they want to murder us? So I want to get that out of the way. But also...
Wait a minute now. Can I respond to that before
you...
Basically, of course, the religion of Saudi Arabia is Wahhabism. Wahhabism is a militant form of Islam that hates the West. The Saudis may smile at us, they may pretend that they love us, but of course, many of the nobility, many of the royal family, are deeply involved with Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden happens to be a Saudi. His family is as close as, as thick as thieves with the Saudi royal family, and we know that members of the Saudi royal family, in fact, the Saudi ambassador in Washington, D.C.'s wife was funding two of the hijackers who are living in Southern California. That's all in the 9/11 attack. So I'm sure what you're saying is tongue-in-cheek. I think that the Saudis hate America, as do so many Muslims throughout the world. And unfortunately, that hatred for America is growing. It didn't exist before except within the Wahhabi religion and a small group known as the Muslim Brotherhood. But that movement is growing, and everything we are doing is intentionally designed to flame the hostility of the Muslims for America and to spread this radical form of Islam.
Can I say something here? Why did they have us all in the 4 days at a standstill? No airplanes were allowed to leave, but they did fly out a lot of these family members. That question has never been answered.
Okay, Tim, go ahead.
Well, no, my statement was not in tongue-in-cheek, Dr. Stan. You were insinuating last Friday that the bombing was directly related to these 19 terrorists. And that is an utterly lie, and you know that yourself. Ellen,
you don't think there were any terrorists?
Yes.
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
No, I'm just asking Tim.
The terrorists were Jewish, Larry Silverstein, and Giuliano, an Italian guy, and Pataki. He's a Polish guy. See, I could come up with a list of 19 people. Bill and Hillary, they know this was going to come down. They knew it was all coming down. But real quick here, Ellen, I'm sorry.
No, you're right there, sir.
How's that?
You're right, sir.
But real quick here, Larry Silverstein,
yes.
He purchased that complex 6 months before it exploded for $150 million, and he collected $7 billion. And right after he purchased it, his security company, he fired the security company that was there and hired George Bush's brother, Marvin Bush's security company. Can you go after those guys in the private sector, Larry Silverstein? We don't hear about him very much.
Well, we'd like to.
Well, yeah, I guess so, but real quick,
we sure would like to. And Mr. Giuliani, he's told everybody in an audience one night in Massachusetts, oh, you must go on. Forget this and go on. Well, let me tell you, it's a wonder I didn't come down there and grab him by the throat.
Well, have you ever contacted any of these elite reporters like CNN, Paula Zahn, or Larry King? He had a show 2 weeks ago on Elvis's anniversary. Boy, that's important. Oprah, Montel, Barbara Wawa.
Well, yes. Well, they were all my friends when it first happened. Because I was flying ahead of my husband when his plane was wherever it went to. They were all my friend until I put a lawsuit in against United Airlines, and they became my enemies. So, no, I have not been interviewed by anybody, and all the media, as far as I'm concerned, has been blocked. You are not going to get the truth now.
Okay,
well, Tim, as far as your point is, somehow the Saudis are involved with this, but the Saudis were very close to many people in this country. The major thing is that they will not allow a lawsuit against the Saudis because they do not want any truth to come out in court. Who was involved? Who financed the Saudis? There's stories that it was financed by a Pakistani general named Ahmad Mohammed, something of the sort. You know, there are all sorts of stories out there. What they have done is they put out so much disinformation, it's hard to tell who was involved. In fact, there's some people who say that many of these hijackers are still alive. In fact, so the pictures that they had, 7 of the hijackers they had pictures of are alive and well. That article appeared in Insight magazine. And then, of course, suddenly Insight magazine can't find any advertisers and has to shut down because without advertisers, you can't survive. So who was it who put pressure on the advertisers for Insight? Because it was the only magazine that was really telling the truth.
Well, I think we need separation of corporation and state as opposed to church and state because, you know, Halliburton and these people all benefited.
Well, I'll tell you what, the interesting thing is, the story is that Halliburton is pulling its people out of Iran. Do they know something that the American people don't know? Is it like that? Okay, thanks so much for calling, Jim.
Thank you, sir.
Go ahead. Did you have something to say, Ellen?
No, but I think it's time for the truth to come out.
I agree with you totally. Let's go to Roger calling from Pennsylvania. Hi, Roger.
Yeah, thanks, folks. I'd like to ask, what do you make, I think we really have to deconfuse before my question. We really have to try to do our best to deconfuse the securing of office holders against discovery and prosecution with anything like true national security. And you almost despair of thinking that can get through the mass of the public's heads.
Well, of course, they will not allow anything to be brought out in the name of national security, but whose security and which nation?
Yes, and I'd like to ask, what do you make of, I guess, is it Jimmy Walters, I believe, the fellow that spent $2 million of his own money and his efforts to get independent investigation in New York?
Jimmy Walters, I think. Jimmy?
Yes, Jimmy Walters. Do you know him?
I've spoken to him once, but that's it.
Well, we are going to have a 4-tape set, a 2-hour interview with Jimmy Walter, 2-hour interview with Paul Thompson. That is the 911 update 4-tape set. Roger, I'm glad you asked. This is an announcement.
Yes.
It'll be available in a week. 2 hours with Jimmy Walter, who spent not $2 million, but many millions of dollars of his own trying to get the truth out.
And
thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Theodora calling. Hi, Theodora. How are you doing?
Well, again, good to talk to you. And Ellen, I met you about a year ago in San Francisco. You did one of the conferences there that was about the truth movement, and I was very impressed then. And
bless your heart. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised to see that you're still, you know, getting the truth out.
We got to do it.
Well, you do, and you were made for the role, so I...
Oh, bless your heart. If I was, God planned it, I guess.
Well, I believe that. I believe that. And this is, you know, I'm glad you're, you know, that you're... I hope your strength and health is holding up, because
yes,
I could tell you were on a mission, and we've got a lot of work ahead of us. And I wanted to let you know we have a 9/11 Truth Movement group here in Santa Cruz.
Oh, bless your heart.
Well, it's all over the United States, but we're not alone, but it's just good, you know, the good news is that, you know, there is efforts in different areas to bring the information out. And
I do speaking engagements if you are wanting to hear the latest and how this all came about, the corruption.
Well, you would be an excellent person, because as a woman, you know, often, you know, it's just good to hear a woman's voice, and you speak as a, you know, as a
I wish it had never happened. I really do. I miss my husband terrible. If you could email Tom Placco, maybe.
Go ahead, Theodore. I'm not going to cut you off just because you said bad things about men.
If you could email...
No, I did not say bad things about men. I said good things about women.
Okay,
and it's
fine.
Not the same.
What was your name again?
Theodore. She's
Theodore.
A great listener here in Santa Cruz.
Can you email Tom Flacco, and I will talk to you later.
Okay, and I also wanted to ask, do either of you are aware of the Zogby poll that was done in New York City?
Yes, in fact, we can talk. Well, you hang on. We can talk about that. We've just got 3 minutes before we have to let Ellen go, but we'll talk about the Zogby poll.
Well, get the numbers, because I'm vague on the numbers, but I think that's a very telling poll.
All right, we'll be right back in just a moment.
Thank you, Peter.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ellen Mariani. And the Zogby poll was done several months ago. I think it was done about December. Jimmy Walters actually financed the poll, and they talked to people in New York and in New York City. And I think outside of New York City, in the general New York, about 48% of the people believed that the government had foreknowledge and allowed the attack to happen. It was over, I think, 51-52%, believed that the government had foreknowledge in New York City itself, and that was before Jimmy Walters spent millions of dollars and put on 2,800 television spots in New York City at his own expense to bring out the fact that it was very obvious the government knew the attack was coming. We will have a new 4-tape set, 2 hours with Jimmy Walter, and then 2 hours with Paul Thompson, who put out together the Thompson Timeline, and that will be available within a week. You can order that 4-tape set from Radio Liberty, and they'll have all of the figures there, because sometimes your certainly memory plays tricks with you, but certainly the majority of people in the city of New York do not believe what we have been told. That's the good news or bad news. I think it's good news. I think it's time the American people realize that the media is lying to them, the government is lying to them, their leaders are lying to them. Ellen, we're just about out of time. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners tonight?
We've just got to save our country. We cannot let it be destroyed, and my heart goes out to all the veterans who've been lost. They're my favorites. I've used to take care of them in my home, and God bless them, and my job now is to visit them in the hospitals. My sympathy goes out to all those that have lost their loved ones.
Well, I appreciate that, Ellen. I appreciate your courage, your willingness to take a stand, not to take the easy course, take the money and learn how to invest it and make more money, but to insist that you wanted to find out what really happened on the morning of September 11th. Everybody who loves liberty needs to join you in this quest to get the truth, because we did not get it from the initial investigating committee, although we got a lot more than from the 9-1-1 commission, which was not an investigation to find out what happened. It was a cover-up to confuse the American people so they would not ask what happened. Because I think if the American people knew what happened that morning, why, of course, there would be cries for the impeachment and the trial and probably the execution of a number of leaders here in the United States. Ellen Mariani, God bless you for what you're doing, and we hope that you'll keep in touch with us.
I will. Thank you for inviting me on your show. God bless you.
And well, thank you so much. If anything comes up again, you know how to reach me.
I
will look forward to having you on again. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
God
bye-bye
bless.
Now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and a lot of people say, why don't you just forget 9-11? Just forget 9-11. We got to get on. We're in a war. Well, we're in the war in the Middle East, which was totally contrived. It was planned long before the 9-11 attack. And if you doubt that, you need to read some of the reports that we have, the National Committee on Terrorism, the various committee, the Rudman, Gary Hart Commission that started back in about 1997 to put together. They were talking about the terrorist attacks on the United States. The Paul Bremer Commission report even gave the excuses that are used today. They talked about the coming terrorist attack. This report came out just a year before the 9/11 attack. I think it was September of the year 2000. And it opens with a story about Pearl Harbor. Now, why did they use the story of Pearl Harbor? Well, because they were explaining that Pearl Harbor was just a matter of incompetence. Everybody was just so confused, and the intelligence agencies didn't work, and they were just bumbling idiots. And it was basically the cover story that they were going to use after September 11th. Who is Paul Bremer? Why, he comes from Kissinger Associates. Who is Kissinger Associates? Well, you remember Henry Kissinger. He was the man that President Bush wanted to head the 9-1-1 Commission. This was all contrived. They needed an excuse to go to war, to inflame the Islamic world, to plunge us into World War III. Just as a matter of interest, Bangladesh now, which is a Muslim country, secular Muslim country, apparently the radical Islamists are beginning to seize control of that country. It may very well be within a year or so, this will be another radical Islamic state, and we're going to find radical Islam spreading throughout the entire Muslim world. It really didn't exist outside of Saudi Arabia and the Muslim Brotherhood before the United States precipitated the Afghan War in 1979, and of course then brought in the Mujahideen, the holy warriors from across the world, and trained them in radical Islam, and began to invest in textbooks to be used in Muslim schools to train children in radical Islam, and financed the radical Islamic movement, and financed Al-Qaeda, and financed the Taliban. We've created the best enemy money could buy. And now everything we're doing is to inflame the Muslim world. And if you think that those pictures from Abu Ghraib, which, of course, the government had and could have suppressed, they did not, they showed them. Why did they show them? To inflame the Arabs. This is what it's all about. Why do we see the pictures of what goes on in Guantanamo and the mistreatment of the patients, of the captives there? Why? Because they want to inflame the Muslims throughout the world. And what they are doing, some of the stories that are coming out of Guantanamo base now, circulating the Muslim world are creating hatreds that will exist throughout the rest of our lives. And that's how you get a war going. You get the two sides to hate one another. Read the book by Samuel Huntington called The Class of Civilization. This Professor Huntington, who's chairman of the Department of History at Harvard University, talks about how you would inflame the Islamic world, and we're doing everything that he told us not to do. He told us not to inflame the Islamic world because we would have all of the Muslims in the whole world against it if we did exactly what we're doing today. Well, you need to get the material we have here at Radio Liberty. We carry Paul Thompson's timeline. We carry a book entitled Inside Job by Jim Mars. Tells the story of the woman who came out of the hole in the side of the Pentagon, and so much other material you won't get elsewhere. The book Cover Up by Peter Lance, the book Cover Up by Dennis Cuddy, his book September 11th, Prior Knowledge. But you'll certainly want to get our great new four-tape set entitled 9/11 Update. That's 9/11 Update. It's four-tape sets, as we have so many new four-tape sets, on Vaccine A, on depleted uranium, a new four-tape set on fluoride. They're all available now here at Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Please go to our website at radioliberty.com. Encourage other people to listen to our radio programs on the Internet 5 hours a day, on shortwave 4 hours a day. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until Thursday, when we'll be back with you again, Dr. Stan, good night. And well, we'll be back for the next hour in just a moment. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station we're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We're hoping to have Joel Skousen with us, who's from World Affairs Brief. He's the editor of World Affairs Brief and certainly one of my favorite guests. We have to try to interview him several times every week on his publications, which, of course, will keep us abreast of what's going on in the world today. And, well, unfortunately, there are many tragic situations that are unfolding that the average individual has no suspicion of what's really going on. Now, it was about 10 days ago when an article by Seymour Hersh appeared in the New Yorker magazine, and Seymour Hersh certainly has a great deal of information, and I've followed his career through the years. He's you might say he's a far leftist, and yet, of course, I feel he's very accurate in his appraisal. He has sources of information, and I like Seymour Hersh. In fact, I subscribe to the New Yorker magazine specifically so I can have his articles on hand. And Seymour Hersh said that we have special commando forces, special forces units that are openly operating in Iran at the present time. Now, this is an act of war. When you actually have commando forces working in a foreign country, that is an invasion, isn't it? But, of course, they're not going to tell the American people that, because, after all, the Iranians are the bad people, and if there's going to war with Iran, it's going to be their fault. We would never have a preemptive attack, or would we attack Iran? Well, I talked to Avi Lipkin, who is, of course, born in America, but he's an Israeli citizen, had served in the Israeli military, and I think he has strong ties to the current Israeli intelligence service at the present time. And I talked to him just this last week, and Avi is certainly one of my favorite guests. And I mentioned this Seymour Hersh article and the fact that Seymour Hersh claims we have commando teams, special forces teams in Iran at the present time, and of course they're looking for the sites where they have the they're building their nuclear weapons. They're putting sniffers in, which will send out radio signals so we can identify the sites for the coming a bomb attack, the coming attack on Iran, to wipe out their nuclear potential. And Avi's remark was, well, of course, I know that there are Israeli teams in Iran working, commando teams in Iran working today, and if there's Israeli teams there, there's no reason why we should not be having suspect that there are special forces teams there as well. So we are already at war with Iran. We just haven't told the American people that. Now, what's so interesting is that Halliburton, which is, of course, the corporation that Dick Cheney used to work for, in fact, I suspect he still does, I heard he was getting a deferred salary from Halliburton. He went from being Secretary of Defense to becoming CEO of Halliburton. He was just so competent, he didn't have to work his way up. He started at the very top, and then he left Halliburton and became the vice president, but he got a deferred salary from Halliburton. Some people might think it was a conflict of interest, but they would have to have a very suspicious mind or believe in conspiracy. But Halliburton has been working in Iran in violation of the laws of the United States, and suddenly they're beginning to pull their people out of Iran. Does that foreshadow a coming attack? Well, we've got with us Joel Skousen. Joel, what are your thoughts on things I've been talking about?
Well, I think that you make a good case, Dr. Tan. Certainly, deep penetration reconnaissance forces in Iran are a prelude to an attack, and I think it's correctly targeting Iran nuclear facilities.
Hold that thought for just a moment, and we'll be right back here with Joel Skousen, editor of World Affairs Brief. All right, Joel, editor of World Affairs Brief, you pick up the story from there.
I think it's not surprising that Israeli commando teams would also be in Iran. Certainly they are doing so in coordination with U.S. forces. There's no way that they'd be sending teams independently lest they clash with one another. And I wouldn't be surprised, frankly, if you had Israelis leading or playing the role of advisors to the American teams. The Israelis are... This is their home turf. They know this territory like the back of their hand, and they would certainly be, have the best intelligence as well as contacts on the ground who could lead them to these areas. I think it's important to remember that the top Pakistani scientist who was in charge of Pakistan's nuclear program is the one who has also admitted that he advised Iran over the last decade on their nuclear program, and he's finally gone to the United States and offered to explain to them where he worked and advised them. So they've got some pretty good intelligence about Iran's nuclear secret program.
And, of course, Iran has, of course, very accurate missiles because they got them from Communist China. And, of course, Communist China got the technology so they could have accurate missiles from the United States government under the Clinton administration, and nobody was ever tried for treason. In fact, the excuse was, oh, well, of course, Bill Clinton got a couple of $100,000 in campaign contributions. That's why he gave all the highest missile secrets we had in technology to Communist China. If you believe that, why you probably believe anything? I believe we've created the finest and best equipped enemies that money could buy. Go ahead, Joel.
In other news, the Iraqi election, of course, is the top news story this week. The United States is painting this as a real success. I have, of course, some real questions about whether or not or what the outcome is going to be. Everyone admits that the Shiites, of course, are going to come through with a majority. The big question is whether or not the Shiite coalition list under al-Sistani is going to prevail, or whether or not the coalition list backing the political party of the current U.S. picked Prime Minister Alawi will prevail. And if they're even close, we may find, of course, the U.S. Trying to broker an arrangement where Alawi will be the prime minister. I'm convinced that the U.S. wants a puppet government in Iraq, very similar to Afghanistan. That's the big reason why they gave the position to Alawi beforehand, so that he could have the upper hand in terms of gaining a track record to which Iraqi people would look towards.
Hold that thought. Yeah, this is Dr. Stan, and Joel says that he's very, very concerned about what's taking place in Iran and the fact that there probably are American and Israeli commandos there looking for the nuclear sites. And then he was talking about the elections, recent elections in Iraq, and he feels that the United States really wants Alawi, the current puppet that we placed in power, to remain in power. And of course, the last thing we would want is for a truly representative government there to come in and would say, we want the Americans to go home. We want to take care of this ourselves. Do you honestly believe that we would allow such a government to exist in Iraq?
You know, if Afghanistan's any indication, the U.S. really pulled out all of the stops to intimidate other candidates who are running against Hamid Karzai, and he still really doesn't run the country. He runs about a 10-block area in Kabul and essentially walks out of his palace, and he has to be surrounded by a massive U.S. guards. This country is still run by the Afghani warlords, and it's become once again the open empire. So this is not a success whatsoever, although the U.S. is painting it as a success. What's interesting for me, I've got one of my subscribers is just headed for Afghanistan as part of a National Guard unit and has indicated that they're there to train Afghani forces, much as U.S. forces are training the Iraqis to handle their own police and military duties. So one of the interesting things he's found out already is that they don't even have a system whereby people are required to get permits to get a hold of automatic weapons within the country. In other words, weapons are openly bought and sold, even in Kabul, to anybody who wants them. And so obviously the U.S., in my opinion, is allowing for future conflict to rise in the country, even though they have a puppet government there. They certainly aren't making an attempt to shut down the arms bazaar that Afghanistan has been for many, many years.
And, of course, the tragedy is people have forgotten why we went to war with Afghanistan. We went to war with Afghanistan because we were going to capture Osama bin Laden, but we never tried to capture Osama bin Laden. And we never tried to capture Mullah Omar or al-Zawahiri, the people that we're told are behind, as Joel Skousen says, the mythical al-Qaeda movement. So we let them all escape. And then, of course, we went to war immediately with Iraq rather than try to get the people who we are told were behind the bombing of the World Trade Center. And you wonder how gullible the American people can be.
Well, of course, you know, there were the satellite photos that the United States had showing the unloading of the various thousands of Arabs that were there, supposedly part of the leadership of the al-Qaeda military training camps. And obviously, if the U.S. had satellite photos of them getting on ships and going to Iran and other parts, they could have interdicted those ships, but they'd made no such attempt to do so. And that indicates, in fact, that they did not want to capture the leadership of these of al-Qaeda. And I say it's a mythical organization, not because it doesn't exist, but because it doesn't exist in the framework or the paradigm that the United States claims that it exists as the largest, most well-funded terrorist organization in the world hostile to the U.S. It's my opinion that the leadership of al-Qaeda, including Osama bin Laden, still are lackeys for the United States Central Intelligence dark operations, and they essentially perform terrorist acts in order to engender the needed conflict to create the atmosphere for war and intervention around the world, which, as our president has pointed out in his inaugural address, in which he will flesh out in many, many details, he's going to continue this intervention in a much higher profile way in the next 4 years, and this should be very worrisome to Americans.
It certainly should be. In fact, this last week I talked to Paul Sperry, who was formerly the chief correspondent for World Net Daily there on the in the Washington, D.C., and he wrote a book about Afghanistan called Crude Politics. Crude referring to oil and politics, referring to the fact that this was all political, pointing out that, you know, we went into Afghanistan for the oil, to get the oil pipeline through, but even more than that, talking to the men who come back from Afghanistan, we did not try to get Osama bin Laden. What was so significant in my conversation with Paul Sperry is he told me his publisher, although he printed the book, refused to try to distribute it and admitted to him They refused to try to distribute the book. Now, we carry the book, we have it, but everything has been done to suppress the information because the last thing the establishment wants is for the American people to know that we didn't go into Afghanistan to get Osama bin Laden. And we didn't go into Iraq because there were weapons of mass destruction that threatened New York City. We went in for entirely different reasons, and now we're trapped in a morass. And I share your concern, Joel. I think we're going to war after war after war, and all we need to do is see what happened to ancient Rome when they did exactly what we're doing today. And they didn't last very long.
That's
as
right.
The world's only superpower.
It's going to come back to bite us in a major way. And, of course, I'm concerned because the stage is being set around the world. We look at the rapprochement between Bashar Assad of Syria and Russia. I mean, this is, I'm sorry, not Bashar Assad. He also went to Syria, but also Mahmoud Abbas went there this week, too, and reestablished contacts with his old training regime. We have to remember that Mahmoud Abbas, the Prime Minister of the Palestinian Authority, is in fact a graduate of Moscow University, of their terrorist school. There was a really interesting disinformation piece in one of the, I think it was the Guardian in UK. It was just basically saying he wasn't going back as comrade anymore. He was going back as, a free man representing Israel or representing Palestine and negotiating on a man-to-man basis with Putin, which is just so much propaganda from the far left in Britain, obviously covering for the ongoing relationship between Russia and its sponsorship of terrorism in the Middle East.
Well, of course, Russia is working closely with Syria. Russia is working closely with Iran. Russia
and with Egypt as well.
Right.
I think it's important to remember that terrorism, if you're going to shut down terrorism, the thing that you have to do is shut down their supply of arms, ammunition, and explosives. You can't tell me that the Palestinians have an inexhaustible supply of explosives within the Palestinian or Gaza or the West Bank. They're getting a constant supply of new Semtex and other explosives. There's a new form of explosive that is a peroxide-based explosive that doesn't burn with heat, but it's non-detectable by the same type of gas detectors as conventional explosives. These are coming from Russia through Egypt and being smuggled through the underground tunnels between Egypt and southern Gaza. And that's why it's particularly disturbing that the Sharon administration of Israel is hell-bent on giving back Gaza and paving the way for a Palestinian state, because that's going to become an armed state with continual smuggling going on, and Israel's never going to have the peace that they're crowing about.
And, of course, the most incredible thing is, Joel, that our president says he looked into Putin's eyes, this former head of the, pardon, colonel of the KGB, and our president said he knew he could trust Putin, and so we're finding every possible excuse we can send money over there to help them guard their biological weapons, to help them, of course, destroy their chemical weapons, to help them dismantle their nuclear weapons. We're pouring as much money as we possibly can get the American people to tolerate, and then, of course, Putin is helping to arm the Syrians and the Iranians and the, and smuggling weapons into the Palestinians. There's something wrong with this whole scenario.
Well, the situation in Syria is equally a problem. The visit by Mahmoud Abbas followed a four-day visit by Bashar Assad, cutting a deal in Russia for supplies of SS-26 missiles. Now, these are not a heavyweight missile. These are ones that have pinpoint accuracy, however, and even though they don't carry enough of a payload to put on biological or chemical weapons, they certainly could pinpoint some very specific targets within the Israeli military. Now, there is a couple of articles circulating on the Internet which I think are in error, saying that Syria was cutting a deal with Russia for supplies of SS-18 missiles. Now, the SS-18 is the intercontinental ballistic missile called Satan. And it's huge. It would take huge ships and freight trains to transport those. I just don't think there's any way. I think that's someone's mistaken the SS-26s for the SS-18s. I know of no credible sources that indicate that Russia is going to ship this liquid-fueled SS-18 to Syria.
And, of course, they could hit New York City with
their
SS-18, so that is ridiculous, of course.
Yeah.
But there is so much disinformation up on the net, unless you understand who you can trust, and even the good people can occasionally make a mistake. But I believe a lot of that disinformation is specifically put out, as you've said in the past, simply to confuse and mislead the good people here in America.
And it makes it very obvious, easy for the government to deny these types of stories and for Russia to deny them if people get too vigorous in spreading those stories around. And it does discredit people who can't afford to be discredited.
Right.
But going back to the elections, I think it's very important to watch what happens this next week as the results come pouring in. I don't think there's any way that this election is anything but a fraud. The entire election machinery is in the hands of the Alawi regime, which has every vested interest to make sure that it wins a majority place on this election. All they have to do is win a larger percentage of votes than al-Sistani, and they can dictate the terms of bringing the Sunnis into a position of power, even though they refused to participate in the election.
Well, I remember when we supervised that election in South Africa to depose the apartheid regime, we printed up 80,000 votes, and there were only 40,000 voters. So, I mean, we got in the man we wanted to. It was a phony election. So many of these so-called democratic elections are simply phony elections that are held to give the impression that we have a representative government. Whereas, of course, the government is imposed from the top down, not from the bottom up. We'll be back in just a moment with Joel Skousen here at Radio Liberty. Well, our guest is Joel Skousen, editor of World Affairs Brief, and we've been talking about the elections. And of course, the president has said that if we are asked to leave, if the United States is asked to leave, why, we will, of course, be happy to leave Iraq. Do you honestly believe that, Joel?
Well, that's one of the reasons why they need a puppet government in there who won't ask them to leave. They'll do just the opposite. They'll ask them to stay because of the increased instability in Iraq. This is... I'm absolutely convinced the United States has no intention of leaving. Anthony Cordesman just testified before the Foreign Relations Committee yesterday and made some powerful remarks about the fact that the United States needs to be prepared to leave, that they cannot maintain permanent military bases there or will destroy our credibility among the Arab world about truly setting up democracy. He put out some credibility. Anthony Cordesman really does understand the problem with government. He has to be very careful to not mention conspiracy, even though I'm sure he understands that concept there.
Who is he? I really don't know him at all.
Well, he's a military expert that worked closely with the various congressional investigative committees over the year. He's been in Washington for some 30 years. Got such a long, upstanding reputation. He's given devastating critiques of the anti-ballistic missile system. He used to work in concert with the Senate Foreign Relations Committee under Jesse Helms and others. But Anthony Cordesman is just top-notch.
Okay, fine.
Military analysis. But in any case, he's very much worried that the United States is intending to go on a further juggernaut around the world on behalf of liberty. I mean, certainly President Bush set the tone in his inaugural address. Condoleezza Rice has already set the tone for her whirlwind foreign tour that she's preparing. She's going to give her keynote address in Paris, where she's going to make all kinds of noise about international cooperation, trying to play the John Kerry card with this administration. But she's about to march through the world, going to visit Russia and the Middle East, going to make a big point of making sure that the Palestinians get this Palestinian state during her tenure. She's going on to see the Vatican, Pope John Paul, even though he was hospitalized yesterday. The Vatican staff is still setting up her interview. This is almost a must-show event for any new Secretary of State to pay homage to the Pope. And I'm not sure what all goes on there. I'm particularly suspicious of this particular pope because he is a Polish pope who made severe compromises with the communist government and betrayed many of the Catholic values when he was a cardinal there in Poland. So I've never been a real fan of this particular pope in terms of really standing up for the proper elements. He is very big about asserting the Catholic position of control over all of the church religious sites in Jerusalem. He is in favor of a international occupation of Jerusalem, a tripartite division of the city between Jews, Christians, and Arabs, and that's a recipe for continual UN intervention. But in any case, Condoleezza Rice is going to be pushing this doctrine of intervention on behalf of freedom. And it's a tough one to counter man, you know.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest this evening is Joel Skousen, and he is saying that Condoleezza Rice, of course, is going to be talking about how we're going to have to go throughout the world pushing freedom. That is our purpose, freedom and liberty. But, of course, the question is, who does she really represent? I mean, she was on the board of directors of Chevron Oil Company. There was an oil tanker that used to ply in and out of the harbors of communist Angola called the Condoleezza Rice, only it disappeared. One day it left, and when that tanker came back again, when it had been repainted, an entirely new name. But, of course, where does her loyalties really lie? Do they lie with America, or do they lie with Chevron Oil Company? Go ahead, Joel.
Well, you know, this, as Pat Buchanan said, he said, this is a formula for endless collisions between this nation and every autocratic regime on earth, and must inevitably lead to endless wars. And wars, Pat Buchanan says, are the death of republics. President Bush, he says, also plans to badger and hector foreign leaders on the progress they are making, or failing to make, in attaining U.S. standards of liberty and freedom. Now, I assert that it should also be said that President Bush doesn't know anything about judging the nuances of liberty or tyranny. If he did, he would recognize the plethora of tyrannical edicts that he and his administration are guilty of right here at home in the name of security. I mean, this is incredible, a person talking about mandating liberty and democracy around the world, and yet the way he treats his own citizens in terms of taking away their fundamental rights is certainly anything different than establishing liberty and freedom around the world.
Well, maybe, of course, he says what people want to hear, but this is not what he really intends. In fact, I think we only have to see what they've done in Afghanistan. They have not established a free and democratic society. They've returned to the old warlord society where everybody lives in constant fear of the local warlord, and yet we could have changed that, but we didn't try.
Well, the U.S. only tends to intervene in target countries that can't stand up to the U.S. militarily, whether it's Serbia, whether it's in Macedonia, or whether it's in Afghanistan or Iraq. But I can tell you that this Lone Ranger, George Bush, won't be coming to the rescue of millions crying out for freedom in China, Russia, North Korea, or other tyrannical states that have considerable military power. Not only does Bush turn a blind eye to the world's worst tyrannies, he continues a long-held U.S. preoccupation with accommodation and detente with tyrants. Especially the communists who still secretly run most of these countries that supposedly fell during the early 90s.
And I think that's really so apropos. If we're really concerned about tyranny and freedom, establishing freedom, why aren't we concerned about the terrible tyranny that exists in communist China today? And why don't we ever call it communist China? Why are we concerned about the tyranny that exists in North Korea and in Vietnam and in Cuba and of course, so many other communist countries throughout the world? Why is he talking about freedom and how we're going to have to send our boys throughout the world to establish liberty when, of course, as Joel points out so well, step by step, they're taking away the freedom of the American people today. They're establishing a police state. They're collecting dossiers on every American citizen in total violation of the law. They're collecting our pictures so they can have them on their computers. They're tracking our financial records. They're tracking our medical records. They want to put our children into school at age 3 so they can begin to mold their minds. I thought the president was dedicated to freedom.
Now, the situation in North Korea is particularly apropos to what you're saying. As I pointed out in this week's World Affairs Brief, Congressman Kurt Weldon, a Republican of Pennsylvania, who's, by the way, leading a delegation of Congress on a quasi-diplomatic mission in North Korea, told NPR this week that he had personal assurances from President Bush of two things prior to his leaving for North Korea. One, that he would, quote, not seek regime change in North Korea.
Now, didn't he actually want that message given to Kim Song the second?
Absolutely. And number two, that he would not use a preemptive strike against this communist tyranny.
Mm-hmm. So he's assured the communist ruler that he has nothing to fear.
That's right. Now, this is incredible. Here's a nation, North Korea, with an admitted but unknown quantity of long-range missiles hidden in a series of underground bases, an admitted nuclear weapons program, an admitted biological and chemical weapons program, an oppressive regime as ever that walked the earth, starving people.
That really could threaten the United States, unlike Iraq.
That's right, with multiple gulag-style prison camps, and Bush promises no attack and no regime change.
Well, maybe the words are used to really hide the true motives and true goals.
Well, certainly Kim Jong-il makes Saddam Hussein look like a piker.
Right.
And yet he gets a promise of no regime change.
Well, I think that we're in real trouble. It's going to be very interesting to hear what the president says tomorrow evening. But remember, words many times are used to conceal the true motives of what's going on today. And I really fear that we're following the course of ancient Rome, of war after war, debt after debt, killing off our young people until, eventually, there's no one left to fight for American freedom. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. Well, Dr. Stan here, our guest this evening, Joel Skousen. Please, Joel, go ahead and pick up the story.
You know, the record of U.S. intervention isn't very good at all, Dr. Stan. It's ugly. It shows a path of bombed-out countries subject to continual conflict, which they've never resolved through the operation of peacekeeping troops. None of these nations have ever come close to a truly peaceful democratic state, even if that were a laudable goal, which I don't believe it is. You know, we believe in a republic, not a raw democracy. Bush's brand of democracy is no more than controlled socialism and regulated state of by public governments. Now let's look at the point of Bosnia and Kosovo. Here's two major interventions, first during the Clinton administration, which were continued by the Bush administration. But we're still in Bosnia. They still haven't reached a peaceful settlement of the ethnic conflict there. Kosovo is turning out to be on a long descent into further violence. It's a black hole of Europe. That they're expecting a major uprising soon because of continued U.S. or EU indecision over this breakaway province's demand for independence from Serbia, and the continuing ethnic Albanian majority's failure to embrace reform, to respect Serb minority rights, paralyzing talks on the so-called final status that aren't going anywhere. So 5 years now after NATO ejected Serbian troops and imposed an international peacekeeping administration, they're still lacking an exit strategy there. And meanwhile, of course, Serbia wants its territory back. Unemployment in Kosovo is over 60%, Dr. Stan. There's no foreign investment there because of the continual conflict. And the dwindling number of Serbs are continually beset by these Albanian majority who continue to burn them out of their houses, persecute them. There are riots. There are killings selectively, most done by the ruthless KLA, this Marxist guerrilla group outfitted and trained and armed by the CIA. And most Americans don't realize that the supposed Serbian attacks on the Kosovar Albanians were a staged fraud, that the U.S.-trained KLA were the ones that actually drove out their fellow Albanians upon the threat of violence to their leaders.
And, of course, I always like to point out that Bill Clinton promised the American people that our boys would be home from Bosnia by November. He just didn't say November of what year. They're still there.
Well, you know, in like manner, no one who really understands Iraq thinks that we're going to go wear down the opposition anytime soon, let alone win this insurgency battle. It will be an excuse for the U.S. to stay in Iraq for many years to come to protect whatever government comes out of this election. Now, We're also finding out...
Hold that thought for just a moment, Joel, and we want, of course, to bring our stations back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Joel Skousen. And Joel, before I go on to the rest of your discussion, let's get your telephone number and website out so people know how to get in touch with you.
The World Affairs Brief is a weekly news analysis service I provide to subscribers. I do have a website where they can check out the World Affairs Brief. It's www.worldaffairsbrief.com. And most of the material on the website is free. My researchers diligently post all of the main top stories each day in a scrolling screen presentation. You can look and download any of those stories. I give my analysis of those stories, filling in the things that the mainstream and alternative media may not say at the end of each week. And you can, for those that don't have access to the web, you can get sample copy of the World Affairs Brief, the current edition, in printed form by calling toll-free 877-518-5888. That's 877-518-5888.
And I would simply comment that every morning, one of the first things I do three things in the morning, and I go to my emails, I check a certain market positions, I go to my emails, and then I go through the World Affairs Brief website, and I do this every morning to keep abreast of what's going on, so I don't have to go onto the internet the rest of the day. I know all the important news, and let me recommend World Affairs Brief, www.worldaffairsbrief. You'll find fascinating articles there. I read the summaries. A few of them I pull down and keep permanently. An excellent source of the information you need to keep abreast of what's going on, not only politically and educationally, but financially as well. So well, let's pick up the rest of the story there, Joel.
I think these summaries are important on the website. You know, a lot of websites just give you the title of the stories, you can click on it and read about it, but my researchers give a 3 or 4 sentence summary after each one of the titles so that you know the essence of the story and whether or not you want to go and read in depth. For example, one of the stories last week was the secret crimes of the Alawi regime. The Alawi regime is beginning to look as bad as Saddam Hussein, and this is the U.S.-sponsored regime. U.K. Times reporter Richard Beeston reported from Baghdad that that Captain Jerrold Southall of the Oregon National Guard, one of the only officers or soldiers to come forward public about these abuses, told him, quote, prisoners were bound, blinded, gagged. Many had terrible bruises and burns. One room contained hoses, broken lamps for electric shock, and chemicals. Captain Southall of the Oregon National Guard was reporting on his unit's discovery of torture at one of the Iraqi detention facilities. Now,
under Alawi, who we are backing and put in power.
That's right.
And that sounds just like Saddam Hussein.
But this is the problem, is that U.S. military leaders are now complicit in covering up for this torture, because when Lieutenant Colonel Dan Hendrickson, their commanding officer, radioed to his superiors about what they had found, and they'd taken possession of these poor captives who had been tortured, he was ordered to return the detainees to Iraqi custody. So at the main Central Intelligence Directorate operated by Alawi's chief interrogators, torture was also going on. U.S. forces found that Ali Rashid, 24, said that he'd been arrested in Baghdad last July and taken to the Central Intelligence Directorate run by Alawi's people, where he was accused of belonging to the Muqtada al-Sadr's rebel Mahdi army. He was tortured with a cold water treatment, where they bring a small cell where they bring the water up to your nose level so you're nearly drowning, applied electric shocks to his genitals. He was beaten so severely by people with cables on his arms and back, he said the Iraqi government stands accused today of some of the same human rights abuses as Saddam Hussein, including the torture of prisoners. So that's the regime that the United States is covering for, and I say covering for not guardedly at all, because of this report that U.S. superiors at coalition headquarters did not want U.S. Oregon National Guard people to bring these people out of detention. They wanted to give them back to their torturers.
Well, of course, we have, and you've been writing articles about how the CIA and the whoever it is, and certainly of our intelligence agencies, are taking people, we capture them, and turn them over to other countries to torture them, because we wouldn't want to do that, but we'll give them to other people to torture. How do you justify that? There was a fellow Canadian they picked up at the airport somewhere in New York or Washington, D.C., and sent him over to where was it, Jordan, where they would be he could be tortured. And he wants to sue the American government for doing this because he was eventually let go. And, of course, they said, oh, we can't allow a suit. We're going to invoke national security because we would endanger national security if we allowed a suit about this man that we picked up at an airport, not even an American citizen, just passing through. He wasn't coming in the United States. He was just passing through, and we sent him to be tortured. And where is the outcry from the Christian population of America and from our Christian leaders? This is what's infuriating and almost frightening. As
right.
If almost everybody is afraid, like they're hypnotized, as they see the snake ready to strike and they're afraid to move.
Well, you're referring to Syrian Canadian Maher Arar, who is in the process of litigation, and the U.S. is employing the state secrets privilege. Supposedly a rare use of law, but the U.S. Department of Justice filed a motion in the New York Eastern District Court this week stating that the release of any information concerning the U.S.'s involvement with Arar deportation to Syria could jeopardize, quote, intelligence, foreign policy, and national security interests.
Was it Syria they sent him to?
That's right. They sent him to Syria. Now, Arar is being defended by New York Center for Constitutional Rights. Said the government is abusing claims of national security in order to avoid a review of its policies and handling of terrorism subjects. They're asking the court, he said, quote, to sanction their cover-up, basically. Indeed they are. This is an act which any honest judge would know is highly illegal. You are not allowed. There are special statutes in government against misprison or obstruction of justice. It's specifically stated in the law that you cannot use the cover of classified documents or national security to cover up for government wrongdoing, and that's precisely what they were doing. If this judge were honest, which he is not, he would have the U.S. government representatives in contempt and demand that they provide the information.
Now, if we actually send him to Syria, then, of course, this whole idea that Syria is the enemy, that, none of this is true. Obviously, that our intelligence agencies are working with the Syrian intelligence agencies, and maybe the whole conflict over there is not at all as we're led to believe.
Well, I think that obviously Syria is going to be on the chopping block at some point soon. You know, the U.S. had ongoing relations with Saddam Hussein as well. They, of course, have been covering for the Russians, and their as they did in the Gulf War, Russia was making daily resupply flights with military aircraft into Saddam Hussein, and the U.S. proclaimed under George H.W. Bush that Russia was our ally throughout the war, and yet they were resupplying the enemy.
And what was really even more interesting is that recently one of the top aides to Donald Rumsfeld was fired from his job because he put the information out and admitted that the Russians had helped Saddam Hussein move the weapons of mass destruction into Syria and into Iran, possibly Iran, but certainly into Syria before the we went to attack. Here was an article, you know, here's a man who's pointing out the fact that they had weapons of mass destruction, that the Russians helped the Iraqis to move them, and he loses his job. And not a word in the media saying, hey, there really were weapons of mass destruction there, and the Russians helped to get rid of them. I mean, this is the most incredible story. It appeared for a couple of days, and then nobody ever commented on why did they fire the man who brought out the supposed truth about what really happened? Did you see that story?
Oh, I did, yeah.
What was your take on that?
Well, obviously they were silencing a whistleblower. They are not ready to have this information released about Syria. They're making an issue of Syrian the porous border between Syria and Iraq, and I've investigated that this week. Apparently Syria has along its 400-mile border with Iraq. That's a lot of border. They have a 5-foot-high sand berm that they put up with bulldozers. They have guards spaced out about every mile or two along that 400-mile border. it's just very, very difficult. The difficulty the Syria is claiming, of course, is the local tribesmen make a great deal of money in smuggling weapons back and forth, and it's the only remuneration they have. That's their business, and Syria would be extremely unpopular with those tribes, if they tried to shut down this this traffic. But in any case, the U.S. is both at once praising the Bashar Assad regime as well as criticizing it, and they're going to continue to play this game until they want war, and then they're going to bring out the photos, which they've always had, showing weapons of mass destruction going into Syria. They'll take out the satellite photos showing their locations. They'll show, they might refer to some Israeli human intelligence on the ground confirming this. I know that's the biggest evidence of Syria's weapons of mass destruction. But Syria's got more than just Saddam Hussein's weapons. I mean, they have a complete series of warehouses of their own Russian-made weapons. They have the most missiles of any country surrounding Israel, and they're going to use those in the next Middle East war. At least 800 missiles. And believe me, they can throw salvos at 200 missiles at a shot and overwhelm any of the Arrow or Patriot missile anti-ballistic missile systems that the U.S. or Israel has fielded.
Unless, of course, there is some sort of a secret weapon system that they're not telling the American people about.
Well, of course, they do, you know, have the airborne laser and the groundborne laser system that could shoot down multiple rockets, but still, it's felt that even a 200 missile salvo would overwhelm even that.
Well, it's going to be very interesting because I think that we're drawing closer and closer to this day of conflict. It's only a matter of time, whether it'll be a year or 2 years, but it's coming.
Yeah, I think we're going to see by the tone of the Bush State of the Union message. I think we're going to see him promising something for everyone, including tax cuts. It's going to mean, you know, very, very big deficits. On that subject, the administration, the budget department said the budget is looking like it's going to be $427 billion, including $80 billion for the war in Iraq, and that's usually understated. As usual, this does not include the robbing of the Social Security Fund of its estimated $375 billion, which are included in the budget to keep it from showing its true state. If that were included, which it should be, that would bring the true deficit to about $800 billion this coming year, about the same as last year. Now, it's interesting that they talk about the supplemental budget. The actual budget presented to Congress always has current military operations zeroed out, meaning there's zero money applied to current military operations, as if there never are any current ongoing military operations, even during the middle of a war on terror. All of this funding for military operations is done by supplemental appropriations during the year, and that's totally off budget. You know, the budget really is an exercise in futility. It's convenient for the president to put forth a new budget prior to the State of the Union message, but mark my words, after the speech, where Bush will expect to promise billions for more pet causes, the budget will go out the window. And yet people will still remember the $400 billion amount when it will probably go up at least $100 more billion, especially if he has more space boondoggles and other things. But he will promise something for everyone. I think when you start to tally that up, you'll see that it's not going to work, especially the Social Security reform system that he's proposing. As Ron Paul said, you know, you want to reform Social Security, well, stop spending. That's the way to reform Social Security. Stop spending the money. I was just taken aback several weeks ago when I heard President Bush talking post-election to various Republican audiences about Social Security, and he was just decrying the fact that this government continues to spend that Social Security money each year, and, you know, we need reform so the government doesn't keep, robbing that Social Security fund. And I thought, well, doesn't he understand that he is the government?
Yes, he does understand that, but he thinks that the American people are too dumb to understand what's going on. And the tragedy is that when you say something so sincerely, and you're, after all, everybody knows you're a Christian president who's on your knees every morning praying to God, and God is guiding you, you wouldn't really expect that he wouldn't be telling the truth, would you?
You know, understand, it isn't Congress that decides to take the Social Security Trust Fund each year and spend it. It's the president who puts out an executive order authorizing the dip into the Social Security Fund.
But both the Democrats and Republicans have done it. I mean, they've been doing this since the days of Lyndon Johnson.
That's right. But President Bush, you know, had to put his signature on the line to keep this going, and yet he points the finger about this dirty government that keeps robbing Social Security as if it's something totally separate from this man. And maybe it is. So maybe he really is more of a script reader, as I've always said, than we thought.
Well, I fear that he is simply a front man. I think the man who runs the government is Dick Cheney and the men that he represents. Of course, Dick Cheney's not the top man, but he certainly is part of this whole, what I refer to as the Brotherhood of Darkness, that controls whether the Democrats or Republicans are in. They're always controlled.
Absolutely true. I'm going to be interested to see what he proposes in the State of the Union about this continual illegal immigration problem and his amnesty guest worker program. You know, this is amazing. There's never an issue that has been so unpopular with the American people as the continual porous border. One of the things that came to light just before Tom Ridge left Homeland Security, by the way, is that he admitted to the press, he said, you know, when they asked him about the just a tremendous increase in the number of border security agents. Do you remember the number that he had proposed?
I thought there was something like 20,000. I don't know.
Yeah, it was thousands of border security agents. And Tom Ridge said it was just a red herring. They're never going to be funded. In other words, he threw out that number as if he was going to do it. And Tom Ridge admitted the administration has no intention of funding that border security increase. And it was just blatant. A little bit of the press that got on our website yesterday, but nobody else picked that up that I saw. Didn't hit the major press that Tom Ridge admitted that it wasn't going to be funded. I mean, this president has no intention whatsoever of shutting down these borders and stopping this flow of illegal immigration.
But of course, the real agenda is the uniting of the northern hemisphere. And that's why we're not trying to stop the immigration. They talk about trying to stop it, but they even have organizations that represent the illegal aliens that are coming financed by the Ford Foundation with tax-exempt money. And this whole illegal immigration movement is being backed by the federal government and by the tax-exempt foundations and the corporations, because the real purpose, of course, is the destruction of American sovereignty, but they can't tell the American people that. Why, the American people might rise up in their righteous indignation when they realize that they are being betrayed by their leaders who intend to transfer the wealth and the freedom of our country to other nations. We'll be back here to wrap up the program with Joel Scalzi. Dr. Stan here, our guest this evening, Joel Scalzi. We've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program, Joel. It's always fascinating.
Well, you know, the problem with this illegal alien open border situation is it really does belie the fact that our president says that, we're serious about this war on terror. Obviously, it's very easy for terrorists to come across the border. I call it the mythical Al-Qaeda, because if it were really, truly a powerful, all-powerful organization, they should be able to pull off the simple, normal acts of terrorism, especially when you have open borders. I mean, how difficult is it to cross the border from Canada or Mexico and blow up some electrical pylons or some railroad tracks in the southern part or the northern part of the United States? We have none of those simple, easy, cheap acts of terrorism. I mean, you just can't have it both ways. You can't claim it's the most effective, largest, well-financed terrorist organization in the world, and it's everywhere, and not have any normal terrorist attacks. I mean, we think these people only do high-profile acts. Well, agent provocateurs only do high-profile acts, but not normal terrorism, as is demonstrated by the amount of terrorism that Israel has, with 100 times more security at the borders and huge fences. They still have terrorist attacks.
You would think they could find one suicide bomber in all of the 1.25 billion Islamic people. There could be one suicide bomber that they could bring across the border and get to commit an act of bombing, but we haven't had one of them, have we?
That's right. That really not one.
Not one.
It just doesn't make sense.
Of course, the thing that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. Everybody believes that we're facing a terrorist enemy and we could be attacked at any day. And it's always reinforced by the television programs. There's always a new terrorist threat, and they're all make-believe. They're all on television.
Well, the only real terrorism, though, is the ones that will and certainly do come up occasionally, and the more we investigate those, the more we find that there's government backing and cover-up involved in allowing those terrorists to make it through our intelligence sieve. And what's worse now, we find illegal Chinese aliens being infiltrated in ever larger numbers into Latin America for eventual entry into the United States. Panama's awash in Chinese, as well as Venezuela, Argentina, and Uruguay, and Brazil are reporting large numbers, and a lot of that's facilitated because Venezuela, Argentina, Uruguay, Chile, and Brazil now are controlled by Marxists. Pretended to be middle-of-the-road leftists, but they're actually all Marxists. And according to the Argentine National Gendarmerie, in the past year they've detained 700 Chinese nationals that were headed for the United States. So
we're out of time here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening has been Joel Skousen. Joel, one more time to get your telephone number and your website out before we let you go.
For a sample of the World Affairs Brief, call 877-518-5888 or go to worldaffairsbrief.com.
God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us, Joel.
All right. See you tomorrow morning.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, the guest has been Joel Skousen, certainly one of my favorite guests, and I hope he's one of your favorite guests as well. To really understand first how we brought communism to China, you need to get our four tape set on China. You need to get our four tape set on China. To understand how all the wars of the last century were contrived, and of course were never fought for the reasons that the men who were sent overseas to fight and bleed and suffer and die were told, you need to get our video of Iraq, the Untold Story, and of course, hopefully you'll want to get the syllabus that goes along with that, because there you'll have the documents to back up the fact the Spanish-American War was contrived, the First World War was contrived, yes, even the Second World War was contrived, because major American corporations continued funding and financing and building for Adolf Hitler all during the Second World War, and then after the Second World War, where we brought many of the Nazis to the United States, and another 10,000 the CIA took down into South America in the rat line. Why would we allow Martin Bormann and Mengele, Dr. Mengele, and all these other evil Nazis to escape, Klaus Barbie and Adolf Eichmann? Why would we help them to escape to South America? Unless nothing is as it appears to be, that's Iraq, the Untold Story. You need to get that information. You need to help us get it out across America. We have a great four-tape set. It's called Operation Paperclip. It covers the Nazis, of course, the fact that we helped the Nazis escape to South America. And we brought many of them here under Operation Paperclip. That's the four-tape set, Operation Paperclip. You need to get the information. You need to help us get the truth out across America. And then, of course, we have a great new four-tape set on Vaccine A, and that, of course, is the true story of what happened as far as the Gulf War illness, why it came about, and of course they're still using the same vaccine to cripple so many of our young soldiers. Do you know a better way to destroy a nation than to destroy its soldiers? And of course to give them a vaccine you know is going to make many of them sick for the rest of their lives. That is, of course, Vaccine A. We have a four-tape set. We carry the book. You need to get that information. You need to get our four-tape set on water fluoridation. They're poisoning our children. And we've got a great new four-tape set on water fluoridation that's now available. And then, of course, Chris Bryson's book, the Fluoride Deception, Russell Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life. That has got a great section on fluoride. How to Save Your Teeth by David Kennedy has a great section on the fluoride, although it's primarily about dentition and what you need to do to protect your gums. And it does not include brushing with fluoride toothpaste, which I've given up. And then, of course, we have a great new video on fluoride put out by David Kennedy. And, of course, the Citizens for Safe Drinking Water. And then we have a four-tape set on the mercury and a video that goes with that entitled The let's see, that is uninformed consent. We have a four tape set on aspartame and a video that goes with that called Sweet Misery. We have the information that will let you understand that they're poisoning the American people, and of course they're destroying our American military. We have a new four tape set on depleted uranium interviews we've done going into the background of depleted uranium, and of course if the vaccine doesn't get our troops, the depleted uranium will, and of course it will be there in the Middle East, killing the people they live there for generations to come. That's the four tape set on depleted uranium. All of the information I mentioned is available by going to our website at radioliberty.com or call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And understand that behind all of this are dark spiritual forces. Get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the video, and then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until Thursday, may the Lord be with you.